This AIR's iCast takes a look at streaming services and their impact on the audio and video industries. In this interview with Zach Fuller, an analyst at Media, Richard Marx discusses the hot topic preoccupying the music industry right now, streaming. Are playlists effectively a threat to radio broadcasting, or can the two coexist? What parallels can be drawn between the disruption of streaming in the music industry and the impact on broadcasting of video services like Netflix and Amazon Prime?
Well, welcome to the show, Zach. Now, Media is a new name for our podcast, but not for the music industry. Can you give me a lift pitch as to what Media does and how you came to be working for them?
Sure. So Media Research is a media and technology analysis company, and we focus on providing insights on the intersection of content and technology. Some of our clients include some of the biggest global companies in the media industry. So that ranges from rights holders and broadcasters all the way to distributors and streaming companies themselves. My personal history with Media began around 2.5 years ago. I had been working for a music licensing startup, was as with a lot of people in the industry, a keen reader of Mark's blog, Mark Mulligan, who is our founder and CEO. And when I was reading this blog on my lunch break, and he announced he was doing this company or expanding the company, and I jumped at the opportunity.
We're going to be very much focused on the broadcast end of the industry at our conference in Athens, but looking at the music industry as a whole, what are the hot topics at the moment?
So put simply, it's streaming. So if you consider that the entire retail model of sales, which was the primary way people would consume music since the recorded music industry's inception, for a brief moment, this was anachronistically fitted for the brief existence of the download, slowly being grandfathered out right now. That's been upended by this switch to being based on a model of engagement. And whilst the narrative is very celebratory right now, revenues are going up. Previously, an industry that was almost all but written off many years ago is kind of enjoying this phase of exuberance. There's still a lot of questions that remain about what does it mean when you make that switch? Does that mean that catalog, which was a asset you could sell at a high margin at minimal marketing costs, was a core money spinner for the music industry for several years, will that generate the same revenue when you're in a streaming model? And then what are the knock-on effects of that? If you have a far less or far more volatile revenue base, can you afford to take more risks on A&R? So there's a lot of questions that still remain around streaming.
I think one aspect of the successful recovery of the music business from difficult times in the early days of digital has been that early access to music online has been driving more and more people to turn live music. Arguably, tours used to be lost leaders to promote the album, but now the reverse seems to be the case, with the new single perhaps as a promo to get people to pay for a tour ticket. Do you think we're ever likely to see a situation where the music industry could survive just on music streaming revenue alone? Or is that live element now absolutely essential?
And of course, when you look back at those gigs, concerts were much cheaper now than, back then rather than they are now.
Yeah.
So you're completely right. It was back then that the recorded music side was the main money spinner, and that live would chiefly be viewed as a loss leader because you'd be generating demand. That then switched around the time of the rise of piracy and digital offerings taking off. It's a good question of whether or not it can remain entirely self-sufficient. I mean, it's still a multi-billion industry. So the idea that perhaps the recorded music industry itself is not self-sufficient is perhaps misleading. What I would say to that question, though, is when you're referring to, I guess what you are more referring to is the idea of the artist being self-sufficient on recorded music. Certainly with streaming, that has begun to shift. So now an artist, if they are gaining the right number of plays, getting into those right playlists, artists that do not tour as much as perhaps would have been expected a few years ago can make a career off recorded music.
Now, you mentioned playlists. I think initially I was convinced, as were a number of people, that streaming wasn't a threat to radio, instead seeing it perhaps as the natural successor to the paid music continuum of records, CDs, cassettes, and then MP3s. So I assume streaming would replace music purchasing and running parallel to radio. Recently, though, I've been reading about the importance to artists of getting on the right streaming playlist as opposed to just radio airplay. Do you think that streaming services and particularly playlists are now effectively competing with radio, or do they complement it?
It's a difficult question because on one hand, you can say that radio has actually been remarkably resistant since it first kind of became meaningfully commercialized back in the 1920s. People thought originally that television was going to be the death of radio. And if you look at early TV shows were actually just often radio programs being visually recorded before the medium really took off. What's different this time around, though, is that streaming, in effect, is a direct replacement for the audio experience, and so arguably represents much more of a threat. To radio's credit, though, it's from what our data is showing here at Midia, it's remarkably resistant in the audiences that it's been catering to for decades now. So when you look at the S curve of adoption of the new technology, you finally do get to a point where there is a certain cohort of an audience that simply will not switch over, no matter what the argument, no matter what someone says about convenience or you're going to save money here, or no matter what it is, you're ostensibly stuck in your behaviors. And for that reason, radio, because it's been such a big part of so many people's lives within a certain audience, and granted, that's a very it's often an older and therefore wealthier audience, so it's still very appealing to certain forms of advertisement. Radio will still be effective there, and so actually won't feel perhaps the swift decline, let's say, that the retail model of music faced from streaming.
I was at the Next Radio Industry Conference last week, and it was claimed that radio audience data showed that by the time you're 50, you've only heard half of all the radio you'll hear in your lifetime. However, to me, that implies that today's younger people will inevitably become just like their parents when they get older. Is that the case, or is the radio audience just going to get older and older?
Well, if you consider that playlists offer a direct replacement for that curated experience that radio was so good at offering for all these years. So as you see more of the streaming services start to behave in effect like radio, because you have to remember, radio globally is a far bigger industry than the entire recorded music business. So if I'm not mistaken, the US radio market generates more revenue annually than the entire recorded music industry globally. So that's why actually the radio industry, in essence, is far more appealing if you were a streaming service right now, because the costs of creating a podcast or radio related content is actually far cheaper, and also holds in terms of pure engagement. If we're looking at the attention factor for advertisement, if you want to embellish your platform, podcasts and radio-esque offerings are actually far more appealing than paying out to the expensive existing music rights framework.
Now, at our conference in Athens, you'll be looking at the parallels between the impact of streaming services like Spotify on the radio industry and the impact of services like Netflix on the TV industry. Initially, Netflix had a huge range of content, but then content owners started withdrawing it to monetize it themselves, and that left Netflix and Amazon focused more on exclusive content like Stranger Things and The Crown. What do you think the likelihood in the future is of services like Spotify not just creating their own content, but signing artists exclusively? Clearly, Amazon Music and Apple Music are in competition with Spotify now. Do you think we're going to see each platform having every artist, or could we have a move to exclusive content where perhaps Radiohead are only on Spotify and Beyoncé are on Apple Music?
Well, you raised the comparison with Netflix, and something to remember when you're drawing comparisons between those two companies and the idea of exclusives. So raise the idea that you would have exclusive content, and that would thus incentivize people to go on your platform. Music and video are two very different industries when it comes to rights holders. So when you're looking at music, most of the rights, in fact, the absolute lion's share is concentrated in the hands of the three majors, so Warner Music, Sony Music, and Universal Music Group, and also the independent sector, which is represented as a whole by the Merlin Group. So when you come to these negotiations, these four companies have a huge amount of leverage within those negotiations and can effectively shoot down your business if they felt that Spotify was trying to infringe too much on their territory. But then if we consider the video industry that Netflix operates in, that rights holder framework is far more fragmented. So there are far more rights holders within that industry. And for that reason, Netflix can act like a rights holder, create their own content, but not step on the toes as such of these rights holders. So in effect, if one of these companies did start saying, we're going to take your content away, that's not as much of a problem for Netflix, because it doesn't really generate the same amount of revenue and engagement that music catalog still generates. So lots of people still listen to the Beatles in terms of engagement, but perhaps you don't watch your, just to actually walk that point back, I would say you're far more likely to regularly listen to older music or your favorite older music than you are to repeatedly watch your favorite film from the 70s, for example.
The concept of buy-to-own downloads is interesting if you think about it. I think the platforms will be keen to move away from that, as technically you don't own the content you download. It's really a lifetime subscription. And even then, your supplier could lose the rights for it, and at some point your content could disappear.
Well, that whole definition on the side of Apple, Steve Jobs was against the idea of streaming for a long time. Mm. And one of the reasons for that was, if you walk back through the Apple product launches, he once made a statement that people wanted to own their music. They wanted that intimate connection with that part of their lives. That was made at a time when people didn't have the technology, let's say, to instantly access music. And so the idea of ownership is always a shifting target, or a moving target rather. Now it feels like ownership. So even if you don't have it on your living room or your bedroom, Spotify can still feel like ownership, even if you still have to pay that monthly subscription.
I think it's a fascinating area, because if you look at the BBC a decade ago, they were selling millions of DVDs of Planet Earth, getting £2 or £3 per sale. They'll never be able to make that from streaming services. I think a major challenge for both the music and the video industries is how can they ever replace that income from physical sales, particularly for gifting at Christmas.
And to continue the analogy between video and music, video is undergoing right now the same unbundling effect that music so impacted by. So up until the launch of the iTunes Store and several other digital distributors at the time, or digital retailers, you could not really access the certain songs on an album if you wanted just to have or cherry pick those songs. So for over 40, 50 years, if I only liked two or three songs in an album, I would have to still buy the whole record. I couldn't just say I want that song and that song and that song. Now what's happening with the unbundling of the pay TV framework, you're witnessing all these niche services saying you can just pay X amount a month and have access to the shows that you actually want to watch. The knock-on effects of that, you start thinking of how the analogy I always use is, just to use an American example, I'm not sure exactly how much, but you still had grandmothers in Wisconsin, even if they had no idea who LeBron James was, if they were paying for a pay TV subscription, they were still giving hundreds of dollars each to the NBA.
Mm.
So all of a sudden, if you're now telling consumers, or consumers have the choice to opt out of that framework and pay far less simply for the content that they want to engage with, you're going to effectively see a decimation of certain industries, or not a decimation, but a shift into where they can seek that revenue from.
Mm.
I think Peter Gabriel once said in the early days of digital that the music industry would be the canary in the coal mine, the early test for what would happen in video. But clearly there are a lot of differences as well, as we've been discussing. It's going to be great to hear your paper, which will be in our joint session, where we'll be joined by delegates from both the radio and the television conferences. So it's going to be a great opportunity to have a debate about what the shared challenges and opportunities are around streaming. So thanks for your time, Zach, and we will see you in Athens.
No problem. Thank you for having me.